close call with death. Have you had one? I have. I've had a lot of them, but who's counting? In this session, we'll talk about the events of those of us that have come dangerously close to death and had the great luck or destiny to elude death and carry on. Enjoy the show. Today, I have as my guest, Noel Pikus-Pace. And I saw, along with the whole world, Noel win the silver medal in the Winter Olympics in 2014 in Sochi, Russia, right? And she won many medals in the world stage in world championships around the world and participated also in the 2010 Winter Olympics. I met her that next year at an event and witnessed firsthand in her hands this shiny, beautiful Olympic medal that she brought for us to see. And I was in awe, not only because of the athlete she is and how she stood on the world stage, but also how personable she was then and remains to be now. Today, she smiles all the time and is so happy. There has been challenging times, though, because in fact has had close calls with death and one severe one that we're going to talk about tonight. So to jump into that and jump in your story, Noel, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here.
God, it's like deja vu. I feel like we just already talked about some of this stuff. Weird. So weird. So, hey, before we go too far, I want people to know who it is that's in front of me right now, who you are, where you live. Tell me about your family.
Great. Yeah. So I am Noel Pikus-Pace and I grew up in Orem, Utah, the youngest in my family. I absolutely love all sports. When in high school, I competed in soccer, softball, track and field. And then I also did basketball. And then I also started doing bobsled and skeleton during that time. So, now all these years later, I'll just tell you, I'm going to be 40 this year. So I just told
you. Nice. Yay.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm actually.
Yeah.
It'll be a great year. But I grew up and now I live here with my family, my husband and four kids. We live in Saratoga Springs, Utah. And that's really life is the kids, ages 14. So we have 14-year-old girl, 11-year-old boy, and then twin 6-year-olds that are little blessings and little hillions all the same day. And their life, it's great. And we get to work from home together. My husband and I have our own business that we help to strengthen the mindset of individuals, whether it's in a corporate setting or we've been now working with the youth within school districts. So that's been a lot of fun to be able to develop a mindset program for some of these schools and to see our kids utilizing that. So it's been great. It's really good. Life is great.
That is so cool. You know what? It is super, super needed for mental strength and support and awareness, especially since we went through a couple of years of COVID. And with everybody locked in their homes, kids not going to school, masks covering up faces, it just seemed like it was just so darn stressful for everyone. What you do now in helping the world is just so appreciated and is becoming wildly popular because people need that kind of support. So thank you for your service and what you do.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Fantastic. Absolutely. I love it.
Hey, so how do people get a hold of you to get that kind of care? And
The school district stuff is on we talk one-on-one with the schools. But with my online course, it's noelpikuspace.com. And then there's contact information at noelpikuspace.com. So, and if you want to reach out or anything like that, that's great as well. And it goes straight to my husband. So
fantastic. That sounds awesome. So, you mentioned your kids and your twins. You had those twins shortly after you won the silver medal, right?
Yes. So after Vancouver, so we went to Vancouver in 2010, I finished the worst possible position ever. Don't let anybody tell you it's second, because it's not. It is fourth. So in Vancouver, Canada, I finished fourth. And then 4 years later, my husband talked me into going back again, following a late miscarriage, actually. So some heartache in between there, but it led to some pretty incredible experiences along the way. So one door closed, another door opened. We ended up in Sochi, Russia. for the 2014 games and crossed that finish line with a silver medal, which was an experience of a lifetime. And then within a year after that, I was pregnant and we had moved to Costa Rica. Kind of random, but not super random. We made a bucket list and we just started checking off one thing at a time and saying, what do we want to look forward to? How can we continue to move forward and not dwell on the past? And, you know, it's really hard when you close a door in your life to not be discouraged or depressed or sad because that door has closed. But instead, we decided, my husband and I, that we wanted to have hope and to be able to look forward to a great and beautiful future ahead. And so we created a massive bucket list. And on that, one of them was that I wanted to learn to speak Spanish and my husband wanted to go on for his master's degree. So we sold our house that we'd been living in for 9 years, a beautiful community. We loved our friends and neighbors in the area. And we up and moved to Costa Rica for a couple of years. And that's where our twins were born.
I bet your friends were so sad that you guys were leaving. Did anybody want to go with you?
We were so sad, but we said, hey, come visit us. Come on.
Yeah.
So a great place to visit. But yeah. And then we're
in Costa Rica. Did you go?
Alajuela was our city that we lived in. It's central. It's right smack in the central. So we were basically like an hour and a half from either coast, maybe 2 hours to the east. But yeah, very central, close to the volcanoes, Arenal. If any of you have been to Costa Rica or planning on it, it's a beautiful
place. My wife and I have.
So, yeah, have you?
We loved it there. We're on zip line there on Arenal. Volcano Mountain, went on that zip line in the rain. It was beautiful.
Rain, it's so gorgeous. Yeah, it's a really beautiful place. We love it. We love the people. We love the culture.
Did you learn Spanish then?
Sí, you'll be able to.
That's fantastic.
¿Puedes hablar conmigo en español durante esta conversación? ¿Podemos?
Yay! Good job. I only speak poquito español.
Oh, felicidades. Bueno.
That's awesome. Well, you know what? For those that don't really understand what it is you won that silver medal in the Olympics with, talk to me about, describe the name of the event and what you do there you know.
Yeah, awesome. So skeleton is a crazy headfirst sport. You have to be a little bit crazy to do it, yes. But you sprint. The whole thing is that it's a 40-pound sled. It looks like a cookie sheet. You sprint 40 meters and you run and you dive headfirst onto your stomach with your chin less than an inch off of the ice. Your arms are down to your side, kind of by your thighs. Your feet are pointed in together and you try to not let them hit the ice. And you fly down a bobsled luge track. Bobsled, luge, and skeleton are all on the same track. So the name of my sport is skeleton. And you go head first down a bobsled track, flying, going 90 miles an hour with our chin less than an inch off the ice. And we do steer using pressure points on our sled. We don't just lean. And it's not just by chance who wins. We study it out for hours and hours and hours at a time. And we watch 5,000 frames per second or more and watch very slow motion, watching our competitors, overlapping ourselves, seeing where we're higher or lower in a track, in a corner. And then if prepping our equipment goes, there's lots of hours put into our equipment. And then training is like track and field workouts. So there's a lot that goes into it. And we fly down the mountain. It's usually a mile long track. And we get down in usually about 50 seconds. From zero, we're starting just running.
That is just so crazy and impressive at the same time. And you said that what's your husband's name?
Jansen,
okay. So he was instrumental in helping you design and build your skeleton sled that you used in that event. Talk about that.
Yeah, he was. Absolutely. It was a team effort. When I crossed the finish line for the medal, you know, for that medal, it wasn't just, oh, I did it. It was, we did it. And yeah. that went for him and I mean, for him specifically, but also for my kids and my parents and the community and all those that had supported me and us along this journey. Something major besides all the other support that my husband Jansen gave to me along the way, a huge part of it was he designed and built my skeleton sled. So he had a background in, or has a background in, like steel man. Actually, I should have him like explain. I should know more about it, like better what he
did. Yeah, he should put a little earbud in your ear and he can just tell you what that is.
He does. Yeah. He does like 3D. He does like design with steel on the computer, and he can like design stuff on the computer and then send it to like a steel manufacturing shop or a precision ground place. And then they make the parts and then he assembles it. So he designs it. And he read like,
that is incredible.
But yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It is awesome.
People will just do that.
So was there anyone that approached you on wanting him to design their sled too?
Yeah, there were quite a few actually from the US and Germany and other countries, Canada. But he was like one and done. Well, he actually
Secret sauce. That's us.
Yeah,
you're not getting our sled.
Yeah, he built me two different sleds and they're both awesome. Really.
Oh my gosh. Where do you have those? Do you display them on your wall in your house or anything? Or are they in a corner in the dust in the garage?
You guessed it. I have.
That's terrible.
The one that I competed on the Olympics, I think it's still, I don't even know. I think it's still sitting like in its suitcase in the garage because we moved like to Costa Rica. And I think I just shoved it in a storage shed. And then now I should bring it out, but I'm like, where do you stick something like that? It's like 65 pounds in its carrying case. It's 100 pounds. I should put it somewhere.
That should be a table in your house. You should turn it into a table or something. That thing. Yes. It's that is super valuable. Yeah. That's so cool. So you know what? I was going to ask you, it just so happens that there is a huge skirmish going on right now in Russia. And you were there, you were there in the country and you were around lots of athletes, Russian athletes and everything. How does this event that's going on right now, not that we're going to go deep into it, and I don't want to get totally political or anything, just what does that feel in your heart at seeing what's going on right now?
I think for me, I'm more sad. I'm sad for the people, both of Ukraine and of Russia. There are so many good people in Russia, and along with Ukraine, obviously. But I just feel for them, and I'm sad that this is taking place and that leaders are making the decisions that they're making, because they're such wonderful, wonderful people. Not all of them are. And we try to explain that to our kids, that every country, every people, every religion, every race, anywhere you go, it doesn't matter who you are or where you are, there's the good and the bad and the right decisions and the wrong decisions. And just clumping them together as the Russians are doing this is heartbreaking for me, because there are so many wonderful, wonderful people in Russia that would choose not to be a part of this. And it's hard when we choose to clump them all together, because there's great, great people over there. So it's just sad. War is just ugly. It's not good for anybody. So
it's so contrary to the Olympic spirit, you know, because that's bringing everybody together from, like you say, all different races and beliefs and everything and color together to compete peacefully. It's not like you bring a bunch of athletes together and you beat each other up out there, you know, and hurt each other. You're competing physically. And it's just so sad, you know, to see that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I thought I would just check in with you on that. And so when I want to kind of give you adequate time to talk about, you know, some of these things that were really challenging for you, because some people might think, oh my gosh, Noelle Pikus-Pace, she has this glorious Cinderella story. You know, just everything is beautiful and great and great husband, beautiful kids and stuff. And yet you've had challenges, you know, and there are people that are going to be listening to this and go, oh my gosh, even her, she's had things that have, you know, that have been challenged her. If she can get through it, I can. So talk about, you know, some of those things that were your close calls with death, because that the intent of this podcast is to tell people about the stories that people have where that was a kind of like a switch that goes on in your mind when you have challenging things. What do you do after that? How do you see the rest of life? Do you see it as just a quitting point? You're done? Or do you see it as something you work through, you gain strength, and you go forward and you get the best out of life that's left? What's your opinion on that? Yeah, what happened to you?
Yeah, I think you hit it spot on. And for myself, thinking about close calls with death, for me, they honestly started when I at much younger ages, I was really adventurous and just kind of like my favorite book was like Tom Sawyer. And I wanted to be like that, live out on the Mississippi and, find my own way or something like that. Obviously my parents didn't want me to do that, but there were close calls. Whether it was,
let's talk about some of them. Seriously.
Yeah, and it kind of leads into one of the major ones that took place within my career, honestly, because I don't think I would have known how strong I was had I not experienced tough times before. I think everything builds on top of each other, stacks on top. And every time that we face a challenge or an experience with death or whatever it might be, we're faced with a choice. We can either choose to allow it to hold us back and we can be, drag us into the depths of despair and depression, or we can choose in that moment to say, I'm going to take this experience and learn and grow from it. And it's not easy to do. Trust me, it's not easy to do. But now just start where you are. Start where you are now. You aren't in the same place you were yesterday, but you're a different person in a different place than you were yesterday. So start where you are today. I think that's the gist of what I've learned. But some of these close encounters, I remember my friend and I, we were into a lot of different things, but one of them, we took up a challenge to go up Provo Canyon. And for those of you that know this area, there's a dam off of the river. There's Provo River and there's a little dam that the water, when the water's high in the spring, I think it was right when school got out. So the end of May, beginning of June. So the water runoff was pretty high and it was coming fast down Provo River in this particular section. And I remember my friend and I, we were about 11 years old, 12 years old. We had ridden our bikes up the canyon. We did it. We would ride our bikes up there pretty often to the mouth of the canyon. And I remember getting off the bikes, wanting to just go for a swim. They had a rope swing up on the one side on the higher end of the dam. And you'd obviously want to stay away from the dam. You'd swim away from it. Well, there were some teenage boys down there that were laughing. It looked like they were having fun and they were down. They started walking in the base of the dam where the water comes flowing out and into the lower section of the dam. So it's a little bit of a waterfall. It was probably maybe a 20-foot waterfall into the base of the river to slow the water down. And there were just torrents of water coming, rippling through that base of that waterfall of that dam area. And I remember seeing those boys and my friend and I looked at each other, Olivia and I looked at each other and we said, hey, let's go try that. I bet we could do that. We could do that. We try to be tougher. We're like, hey, we can do that. So I remember walking onto the base of this dam as this water was coming down. And immediately my feet could feel the moss beneath my feet. And I could tell it was going to be slippery. But I didn't want to chicken out because now my friend was starting to go. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be the one to chicken out. I can do this. So I remember just stepping carefully, trying to hold on to the wall. The water was just pouring down over my face, over my head. And it was flipping up at the base of my feet. But you could still walk at the bottom of it. It was concrete, the concrete rolled up to catch the debris and things coming out from the top of the river. And I remember the boys that we saw, the older boys, they were probably 17 or 18 years old. They challenged the other one to hold their breath and just let go of the wall and lift up their feet. And it puts you into basically a washing machine. And that's what they would call it, is the washing machine cycle. So you're just spinning so fast and you don't know which way is up. And for whatever reason, I took on this challenge. I said, I could do that. If they can do that, I can do that. And so I let go of this mossy wall and my feet slipped out from under me and I just plugged my nose. And I just remember spinning so fast, faster than I even thought was possible. And I tried to stop it. The panic immediately set in because I could tell I wasn't going to be able to get a breath of air. And I couldn't tell which way was up. And I just kept feeling concrete and water and concrete and water and concrete and water. And I didn't know how to stop myself. And whether it was divine intervention or what, somehow, some way, I grasped onto the wall and clung onto some of the moss that was on the side of the wall. And somehow, I still to this day don't know how it happened, but I was able to get myself up to grab a breath of air. And I just remember choking on the water, thinking I thought I was done. I thought that was it. In my mind, you're just this is it. It's over. I'm 11 years old and life is ending right now. And it was a real, you get stuck in there and it's not going to spit you out because the water is just the torrent. It's like a tornado under the water. It was so scary. And I remember immediately getting out and laying on the ground and coughing up the water and talking about how dumb of an idea that was. But I think from it, it allowed me a couple things to realize that we are mortal, right? That our bodies are mortal, and that damage can come to them. Because I think at younger ages, you think you're you're untouchable.
Yeah, and for sure.
Nothing can happen to you. Like, you're fearless, you know? And I think it was a really good check in my life to say, oh, wow, like, things can happen. Things can go wrong. But yeah, that was probably the first taste of that close call with death that I can remember that ended up rolling into a couple other experiences. I rolled a minivan up Provo Canyon, man.
It was kind of cursed. Dark.
Yeah, okay. It was. I was coming home with some friends. I was 16, just barely learned how to drive. And I was the only one that could drive at the time. And we did a bonfire up at the canyon and we were coming home and I was trying to be as safe as possible. I was probably going like 50 miles an hour or so. And I stayed in the outside lane and I didn't know the outside lane turned automatically into one of those parks up there. And there was a metal gate that was closed right in front of me. So I was just following the lines. I was just looking, my eyes were looking at the dotted lines in the road, not realizing it was a turnoff to an actual parking lot. And the gate was closed right off the road. And I was going 50 miles an hour and saw the gate. And I immediately turned the wheel and it just caught the lift.
Too late.
It was too late. And I thought I was toast. Like it flipped the van. I remember reaching up to my head and I could feel the crunching of the metal, like the steel was like, it was like putty in someone's hands. It was just bending with the contour of each little pebble. And I could feel those pebbles underneath my hands. And I remember the glass just shattering from the passenger seat to my seat and passenger seat. And I remember the windshield came all the way down and it could have easily decapitate me because it was right at my face view. Luckily I had on a seatbelt. But anyway, that was another experience where I don't know why I wasn't injured. I had five friends in the car and one of them ended up flying from the back seat up to the front and we all walked away from it. And that should have been much worse than it was. So anyway,
what was your feeling after that happened? What did you feel like after, not maybe even immediately, but a little bit later, do you just
gratitude?
You just feel super grateful that you did not die.
Just lots of gratitude. 16 years old, and I remember all of my friends and I. We cut the seatbelts out of this total red hot minivan, and we cut the seatbelts out and turned them into belts, just as a reminder. Like, always buckle your seatbelt. Always like pay attention and just gratitude, sheer gratitude for being alive, for being able to continue to breathe, for not having. You know, I mean, I could have been paralyzed. All of us, we could have walked away or not walked away. None of us really. I mean, we could have all, who knows? You can imagine.
Yeah.
Just gratitude, I would say.
My gosh. Yeah. That's like white knuckle stuff right there. And just so scary. And then after that, then once you got into your Olympic life, and you're competing and everything. And one thing that kind of makes me think of something you said years ago, and I'll never forget it, is you said that you go where you look. Mm-hmm. And it makes me kind of focus on that spot where you said, you know, you were watching the lines, you were staring ahead. And once you saw there was a turn there, it was too late because you were looking so close. You weren't looking down course. And talk to us about that part where you have that firm belief that you go where you look and how that's been able to help you in your athletic ability in the skeleton. Talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That experience that you're talking about was a changing point, honestly, like a complete changing point in my career. And I can think of a couple, like very, very, very few. But that was a major one. And I was a rookie on the team. So at the time I was taking way too many credits in college. I was taking like 19 credits in college. I was running track on a scholarship. And then I made the World Cup team, the youngest athlete, not only for the US, but on the entire like World Cup circuit. I was the youngest athlete. And every track in the world is different. So there's a little bit of information. Every single track, before we get onto the track, we have to study it out. We have to memorize it. We have to learn which way to steer and where to look and how to get down the course. And I remember flying over to Germany with my teammates. And we went all the way over to the Eastern side of Germany to this track called Altenburg, Germany. And it's notoriously dangerous, like very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. And so I remember before I got up to the starting line, one by one, my teammates were warning me, like just saying, oh my goodness, Noel, this is like the worst track in the world. Oh, you're going to get so hurt. Oh, you're going to crash out of corner 9. You're going to crash over corner 10. You're going to crash in corner 12 and 17. And I remember just like feeling this like sense of panic, like, oh my goodness, like, okay, I can do this. I can just say, but I was like, it was like sheer panic. And I remember one by one, the athletes went, and one by one, they ended up in the ambulance. Like, true story, like every single athlete that went before me was in the it's the Krankenwagen, it's the name of the ambulance in German. And they all ended up in the Krankenwagen. And I'm like, oh, please just don't end up in the Krankenwagen. Please just don't end up in the Krankenwagen. And my green light went off, meaning it's my turn to go. They announced my name, Noel Pike's Pace, time to go. So I set my sled down on the ice, took off running, and started steering the best that I could in my rookie experience. And then I got through corner 1, 2, I hit the wall in corner 2, 3, 4, 4. I came up and down and up and down, and I flipped onto my back.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I had never flipped
at like 90 miles an hour, right?
And I had never flipped on my back, not in Park. So I'd been at like Park City in Calgary, Canada, and Lake Placid, New York, and I'd never flipped onto my back. And so I was like, what do I do? This is a new experience. My sled is on top of me.
Oh.
And luckily
and it's heavy.
It's 60. It's like 65 pounds. It's a big weight. And I remember, so I came out of this corner 4 on my back, and luckily the next corner went the other way. So it like flipped me over back onto my sled. And I'm like, oh, this is so good. I'm so good at this sport. So I went down the track 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and flew down corner 9, hitting walls everywhere I went. And also I'm flying into corner 10. And corner 10 is a massive 360 degree turn. It's huge. And you lose track, because when we hit 5 to 6 G's of pressure on average. I think it's probably between 3 and 4, but we can hit up to 5 to 6, depending on where we enter into a corner. And I remember.
Hey, and right there, Noel, what kind of G forces do jet pilots experience?
It's about 5 to 6. That's
about. Yeah. So you're pulling G's just like a fighter pilot. That's crazy.
With our head like dressed on the ice, like you cannot physically pick up your head at that G force. Like I've tried in Latvia. There you go. Another, I could just keep talking about these near experiences, but Latvia, I tried to hold it up. And my teammate said, no, you've got to lower it. Just drag it on the ice. And I said, I'm not going to hold my head up on the, like, I'm not going to drag my head on the ice. Like that's crazy. And they said, you're going to get knocked out. And sure enough, I like went through this corner, holding my head up, and kabam, it just knocked me out like flat.
Oh my gosh.
That was Latvia. But anyway, coming back to Altenburg, I told you I get sidetracked. So Altenburg, I went into this corner, and it's a 360 degree turn. And when you're hitting G's like that, like it forces your helmet to the ice. And all you can see is white flying, like the white of the ice flying past your face, past your helmet. And you can't see where you're going. You can't physically lift your head against that kind of pressure. And your feet are like trying to drag on the ice, and you're doing everything you can to keep them off the ice.
Because and you have kind of cleats on the end of your shoes.
Spikes. Yeah. And the sled ends right below our knees. So our whole shin and both of our feet are hanging. They're just hanging, like free floating. So when you hit those G's, it naturally wants to just suction your whole body to the ice, and you're trying to fight it without steering your sled. That's kind of tricky.
Yeah. I'd say. Oh,
it's kind of tricky, but yeah, going through this corner, I remember just going up and down. You can feel the tightness of the pressure, like pushing against your body, and then it'll release for a second, and then it'll push against your body, because you're going up and down with the oscillations. And I didn't know where to drive, because I just completely lost track of where I was. And I remember thinking, just hold on tight. Just hold on really, really tight, you know? And I went up and down and up and down and up and down. And also I'm on my final pressure of this Kreisel, this 360 degree turn. And I remember just straining my head up as high as it would go to try and see where I was going. And right when I just like lifted my head up enough, I remember seeing like a wooden plank, like a wooden piece of board up right on the top of this track. And I remember just staring at that wooden piece of board. And I just thought, Don't hit the wood.
But that's where you were looking, and that's where exactly. You went, isn't it?
Yeah, I was looking at the wood, and I went right up and I hit the wood, and I came flying through the air. I crashed. My 65 pounds came crashing on my body. It knocked the wind out of me, and my day was done. But you're right. The lesson that I learned from it is where you look is where you go. I mean, something as simple as shifting my eyes, and I'm not talking just athletics, okay, guys? Like, I'm talking everyday life. What are you intentionally doing? What are the habits that you're choosing to keep in your life, and which habits would you like to let go of? But are you setting goals for yourself each and every day? Do you have a plan each week as to how you want to improve in your career and in your health and in with your family, with your kids? Do you have any kind of goals? Because if you don't, you're going to hit it spot on. Where you look is where you go. And for myself, I was looking at all my fears. I was looking at everything I was afraid of, everything that was stressing me out, all of my anxiety. And I was like so focused on it that it just held me back from progressing forward, and I hit it. And something as simple as looking and choosing where I wanted to go and saying, I'm going to let go of this fear and I'm going to choose hope. I'm going to choose faith. I'm going to have faith that I can exit this corner where I want to go. I have faith that I can achieve my goals and create better habits, you know, whatever they might be in your life. Just move forward and look where you look is where you go.
I love that. I love that theme. And it was funny because it's been years ago that I heard you say that, and that stuck with me so much. And so I've told other people that, you know, and so your legacy is going on, and I'm living vicariously through you.
Thanks, Bob.
So let's go to the most recent near-death experience you had that actually physically was really, really life-threatening. And what happened in that situation?
Yeah. So back when I was competing, and I think I've had a couple since then too. So I'll go to this one though, 'cause I think this is the one that you're talking about. But when I was competing, I rose to the top of the leaderboards pretty quickly after this experience of where you look is where you go. I realized the importance of setting goals for myself every day and recognizing those fears, recognizing the fears in my life, not just within athletics, but just real true anxieties and stresses that were holding me back, and trying to find ways to conquer them, to overcome them, one by one, focusing on where I wanted to go rather than where I didn't want to end up. And so soon within by the following year, I was ranked first in the world in the crazy sport of skeleton, which was pretty awesome. And this was right.
That is awesome.
Right before the 2006 Winter Olympic Games. So I was still required, even though I was ranked that high, I was still required to try out for the US team. And at our Olympic trials, just 3 months before the Olympics were scheduled to begin in Torino, Italy, I had just finished a training run. My teammates were coming down one by one, and we were finishing, and we'd sit down at this waiting dock, waiting for a flatbed truck. So I'd gone down this track, and I was thinking about how I did. I was thinking about my goals that I wanted to achieve. And one by one, my teammates came down. Leanne came down, and Tristan came down, and then Courtney came down, and Katie came down, and we were waiting for Lindsay to come down on her sled. And I just remember sitting there in this waiting area. So the track finished, and right off of the track, they had a waiting dock where a flatbed truck would come and back in, and we would climb up a staircase and get into the back of this flatbed truck, and the truck would take us back up the mountain so we could go down the hill again. And as we were sitting there waiting for this truck to come and waiting for Lindsay to come down on her skeleton sled, we were sitting there talking about how we had done. And all of a sudden we heard a really loud noise coming. And I remember as I sat there recognizing, like, when you've been around these sports long enough, you kind of can tell like the sound of the rumbling in the track. And it didn't sound like a skeleton sled. A skeleton sled has like a high pitch, like kind of noise. And this was a really loud, clinky, rattling noise. And I remember turning and looking, because we were kind of like, what is that noise? Where's it coming from? And it was coming from behind us, which is where the finish line kind of wrapped around, about 100 meters away. And we looked towards the finish line. And right when I looked towards the finish line, I could see a 4-man bobsled, about 1500 pounds, coming flying towards us.
Oh my gosh.
And it was going at least, it was probably going 60 to 70 miles an hour when it approached us. And, immediately seeing this bobsled coming, we just weren't expecting it at all, like at all. And we all had our skeletons there. Immediately when we saw this bobsled coming, not slowing down at all, we jumped up to our feet to get out of the way of this oncoming bobsled. But I was stuck in the back of the pack. So my four teammates were in front of me, and I was the one closest to the bobsled. And they were trying to jump out of the track. But to my right, one of my teammates had boxed me in and she was just getting out of the way of the track. To my left was the staircase that we were supposed to climb up and get into. Oh. I had to take a step to get out of the way of this staircase and this bobsled. And right when I planted my right foot to take a jump out of the way, the bobsled hit me from behind. And I remember just flying through the air, like 25 or 30 feet through the air. And I landed on the asphalt.
Oh gosh.
And I remember just immediately trying to jump up to my feet to see what happened. And I just fell back to the ground. And then I remember hearing my teammates screaming, like just chaos going on. And they were running around and crying and screaming. And I tried to jump up to my feet. And like, again, they were about 30 feet away. And I tried to jump up to my feet to go see what had just happened. And I fell back to the ground. And that's when I looked down at my leg and my bones were sticking out of my right leg.
A compound fracture.
Yeah. Yep. It was a compound fracture. And in that instant, like, I knew my Olympic dream was gone. I knew it was gone.
And you were ranked number one in the world.
Yeah, number one, 3 months before the Olympic Games.
Oh my gosh. You know,
looking back, it was a miracle. Like so many miracles took place in that instant because in taking a step, the bobsled easily could have caught my heel and gone over the top of me. And that would have, I would have been gone at 1600 pounds with the blades on the bottom.
Oh just, yeah.
I would have been toast. Or even if I'd landed on my neck, you know, wrong the way that I landed, I don't even know how I landed. I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember any, but I remember them setting my leg and getting back in the hospital and having I still have a titanium rod in my leg and things like that. I still remember those kinds of details, but I don't remember the process of like all of what took place in those little moments, but some of them are still very, very vivid, little bits and pieces of it. But mm-hmm. miracles, I mean, that's all I can say is it's a miracle because they could have been so much worse.
Oh, I'm so sorry you went through that. That is, I will make sure and post the picture of you, there in the hospital bed that showing your leg, after they've worked on, tried to put it back together again. And, because of the listeners need to see, you know, what the aftermath of that was.
Yeah, it was really hard. It was extremely hard. I think for me, like, and everybody's different. Everybody experiences different things from different ranges of physical ailments, to different ranges of mental ailments as well. And for me, I think the hardest part was coming back mentally from that, where the physical aspect of it, like I'm pretty gritty. Like I can take a wound. I can take physical therapy 8 hours a day, like put me through some hard physical chores and you just fake it till you make it. You just suck it up, you get it done and you do what you have to do. That's kind of the mentality I think I've had growing up. But the mental side, I just wasn't ready for it. Cause I thought, you know, if I can just put in the hard work, then my body's going to get better. And even when my body started healing, my mental side was still not capable of catching up to where my body was healing. Like the mental side was a lot more challenging and took a lot longer, I think, than the physical. So
what was the diagnosis at that point? What was the outlook by the doctors for the rest of your career?
Yeah. So following that accident, they said that it would be at least 6 weeks on crutches, 2 to 3 months till I could walk again, like without normal 2 to 3 months. And then they said 6 months before I could even like attempt to start jogging or running to any capacity. And it would be at least a year till I started competing. And talk about like, yes, mental strength and physical strength. I was back competing in 5 weeks. Trying to make this Olympic dream come true. It was 3 months away. So talk about being fully invested as well. I just dove right in and I said, okay, I can do this. So 5 weeks I was back competing and I finished 19th in the world. And then 2 weeks later, I finished 11th in the world. And then a week after that, I finished 8th in the world. Right before the 2006 Winter Olympic Games, I finished 8th in the world and the number one US competitor. And when I was told I missed two races due to my injury, due to being in the hospital, there wasn't a waiver at that time for an injury, even though they could see that I was definitely qualified, like capable of being at the Olympic Games in 2006 and making my way back. And I still had a month before the games by the time the deadline was that they had to name the team. I was told I was ineligible to compete because I missed those points that were necessary in order to qualify. Now the rules have changed. It's great to be a pioneer. Now the rules have changed and I would have been able to compete if that injury had taken place. But once I was told no, after I had given it everything and tried to invest my whole mental and physical everything into this, you know, possibility and was told no, that's really when it hit me. Like I was trying to fake it till I made it all through those weeks of coming back to compete. And when it was a no, and my family, they all had tickets to Italy. And I went to Italy and had to watch on this little screen as my teammates competed and the world competed. It was tragic, to say the
least. I bet.
It was so hard. It was so hard. And it took months.
How do you get through something like that, Noelle?
It comes back to something we've actually touched on for myself. I think a couple things. Now I'm going to add another thing too. For me, first and foremost, it's God. And whether you believe in God or not, a higher source, whatever it is, for me, it's believing in Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian, and turning to Him, was first and foremost. And second was serving others. Getting out of my own space and getting out of my own way and just looking for ways where other people were in need and trying to see that other people were suffering more than I was and not seeing me as a pity party, but trying to just even be distracted by other people's problems helped me to seem to be a little bit better with mine. And then the third, I started keeping a gratitude journal. That's what we kind of touched on before. Every single day I chose to write down 10 things every day that I was grateful for, and I could never repeat the same things. And that can only go so far. But the more that you have to actually think about it, the more that you see that there's a bigger picture out there than just yourself. You see that it's coming back to that, getting out of your own way. Our own minds are so powerful. Our thoughts are so powerful. They shape what we think, what we do, our behavior, what we say. And all that has to do with like music that we listen to, videos, movies, images that we allow ourselves to take in. I took social media off of my phone. And if you go on my social media sites, like you can see when the last time I posted, I was like one very, very far and far and far and few between. Because for me, that was one of the things that I recognized, not necessarily in 2006, that was like too long ago, right? But after 2014, I realized that that was one of the things that was taking a mental toll on me still. Like just, it just wasn't healthy for me. And it's not necessarily that way for everybody, but I decided that I wanted to be intentional with social media. If I ever want to get on there and post something, if you see things from me on there, it's because I've been very intentional. I have 5 minutes. I'm getting on, I'm posting this. I'll check up on this one person. I have to know beforehand why I'm getting on there before I'll even let myself log in. And that has been incredibly life-changing for me and liberating. It's given me my life back. Like I've been able to spend that time with my kids. Like after I get done here, instead of going on social media, I told my kids I'd read them green eggs and ham because tomorrow's St. Patrick's, you know, I know this might be dated or whatever, but, but anyway, it's just, I want to continue looking forward. I want to continue growing and have a bucket list of my own. And it's never a comparison and I know I'm rambling now, but I think the biggest thing that I learned in my Olympic endeavor, by the time I reached the pinnacle, by the time I reached that podium, that top level, if I could share anything with you listening today, it would be that it's not about comparing ourselves. It's not about comparing yourself with someone else. It's not about, you know, having as many followers as the next person or having your yard as green as your neighbor or whatever. It's not a comparison. It's all about improving day by day, being 1% better each and every day, whether it's being a little bit better to your loved ones, writing a little note. If you haven't written a note to them in a while, just write a little note and say, "Hey, I'm just thinking about you. Thanks for all that you do. I love you." And send it. That's 1% better. That's what being an Olympian is about, is just being a tiny bit better today than you were yesterday. And it doesn't matter what anybody else does around you, because all you can do is your best. And to celebrate those successes, celebrate those best moments that you have in your life and give yourself credit for them. So that's why I did. I had to get away with social media because it was way too much of a comparison game. So no offense if you love it, good for you, but
no, I completely get that. And And the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is because there's so many good stories like you have right now tonight that need to be told. There's so much good out there. During the last couple of years of COVID and shut-ins and wars and elections and all those things, there was just so much bad that was being pushed out in social media that kids and young people and everyone were starting to feel like there was so much evil in the world. It was almost that Christ had to be coming soon because the world's so bad. And I just thought, you know, there's so much good that's still left. We just have to push that out and show people that there's a lot to set your sights on, you know, and feel happy about.
Absolutely. No. I love that. Look for the good. And a lot of times there's so much dirt around us that we have to dig through that dirt to find the light, but keep looking, keep searching, recognize where it is and hold close to it. So yeah, it's
great. Yeah. And actually, if you set your eyes where you want to go
and where you look is where you go.
Absolutely. And you know what, gosh, there's so many people that will look into the dark, into these bad things that are going on. And then that's what sucks them in. Yeah, so, have your kids been really, have they talked to you about the challenge you've gone through? And mommy, you're no longer in the Olympics competing. Have you had teaching moments with them?
Oh yeah. Lots of teaching moments. And I think a lot of it, like I try not to like talk it up as much as some might think because they are their own individual people. And so our goal as parents is to help them to find their talents and to be good people and to, you know, look for that light and to develop as many talents as they can and give them, we're basically like a facilitator, basically like, hey, what would you like to try? Here's some opportunities for you. And then we just kind of go along and guide them and help provide those opportunities for them without any, you know, I mean, we have expectations, but without, I think, a lot of like the results expectations that a lot of parents put on kids. And it's just, it can be really exhausting when we do that to ourselves. So,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Just hearing them on day by day and helping them to set goals every day. That's something that I think has been one of the biggest things taken from this Olympic experience and transferring it to our kids is they've seen how hard I worked and how hard my husband worked to make this dream come true, that whatever they choose to do in their lives isn't going to be easy and it's not going to be a free ride, but the possibilities are endless. Like you want to do it, you've got to put in the hard work, and teaching them to set goals and put in the hard work to achieve their goals has probably been the biggest and best learning experience that we've had from all this.
That's fantastic. You know, when I look at you, I see, you know, this really has been a family affair. It's not about just Noelle Pikus Pace. It's about your husband and your kids and everything. Talk about that real briefly about how it's been just kind of like a real family unit.
For sure. So after 2010, so after the Kronkenbog and after where you look is where you go, after getting hit by the bobsled and finally making it to the Olympics in 2010 in Vancouver and finishing fourth place, I decided to retire. I had taken a year off in between the 2006 after breaking my leg and everything. Between 2006 and 2010, I took a year off and we had our daughter, Lacey. And when I went back for the 2010 games, like I just was not in, like my well-being was out of skew. When I was at home, I felt like I should be working out and training with my team. And when I was with my team and training and away in Austria, I felt like I should be at home. And I missed her first birthday and her first words and her first steps. And I was just a mess going into those games in 2010. And I knew I wanted to retire and just be done and spend time with my family after that. So the day after the Olympics, I retired from skeleton, like, yes, okay, good. I'm done. Awesome. I'm out. And, a year later, I was pregnant with, Okay, hang on. So first, a year later, I had Trayson. And then a year after that, I was pregnant with a little girl in 2012. And at 18 weeks, her little heart just stopped beating.
Oh.
And doctors didn't know why. They couldn't figure it out. And it was devastating, like absolutely devastating. And it actually ended up happening. Here comes another near death experience, but it happened three times in a late miscarriage to the point where the doctors said, you can't do this again. You're putting your life at risk. You might be lost in the next, like, if you try to get pregnant again, you might not make it. And, during that experience is when we decided to have faith and to move forward. And we studied as much as we could. We didn't just go in, oblivious, but, we went into it just with full faith and full as much knowledge as we could. Because I'm like apparently a one in a million where this just happens after you have healthy kids and then your baby's hearts just keep stopping at this point. But we ended up bringing those little twins into this world, which was a huge.
That is so amazing.
Oh, so yeah, it was incredible. But the thoughts were, you know, could be there where it's like, oh, I might not make it. This might not work out. Like their hearts might stop. Mine might stop. Like, and we just had to keep looking forward with hope and faith and believing that this was God's plan for us. So, yeah, that was another story. But anyway, that was, well, so the twins came after 2014, but a miscarriage was what led us back to compete in 2014, a miscarriage in 2012. And Jansen turned to me and said, hey, you want to go back and compete in the Olympics? And I was like, I don't know. Kaisa said that's a lot of work to get back in shape. And I was actually really sad at this point, really devastated from the miscarriage. And he knew I just needed something to look forward to hope for and to distract me really, because I wasn't ready to get pregnant again really soon. And anyway, so we did. So I said the only way we can do this is if we do it together as a family, because together we're stronger. Together we can do this. And so we did. So we traveled the world for 2 years in and out of hotels it was my husband. He designed and built my sled. Our daughter was 6 years old at the time and our boy was two. And we just traveled 2 years in a row. And it was just a crazy, wild, fun experience, and ended up in Russia with that medal. So yeah,
that's amazing.
Pretty cool.
So just, you think it was meant to be, or just totally luck?
Oh no, not totally luck. I think there's a little bit, well, you know what? I'll take that back. I think everything takes a little bit of luck, a little bit of meant to be, and a lot of effort and a lot of positive thinking and belief that anything is possible. So I think it's like a recipe, right? I think it takes a little bit of everything, a little dash of this, a little bit of this, but in the end, our thoughts are more powerful than we'll ever know. And allowing ourselves to get caught up in the despairing thoughts and the depression and the things that just hold us back from being our best, those weigh on us so much more than I think we could ever know. And so finding cues, finding people, finding ways to get ourselves away from those negative thoughts, whether it's maybe it's just saying, I'm not going to listen to this music anymore. I'm not going to watch these TV shows anymore. I'm not going to search on my phone anymore. I'm just taking these things out of this recipe so that now this recipe can be nice and healthy. I think that there's a lot of things that we can do to take those negative thoughts away and to fill our minds with positive thoughts and that belief and that empowering, you know, belief that we can truly do anything, despite our circumstances. I think that's huge.
So that's fantastic. I think that's a great thing to end on. Basically, other normal people, people of everyday normal walk of life, can they be like you, Noelle?
Oh, just yeah, absolutely. I am a normal person. Like, I might do something crazy like skeleton, but absolutely. And I hope you're you. Be true to who you are. Find those. I have a lot of people in my life that I look up to and I think, I love those attributes about them. Oh, I love those qualities about them. I love their characteristics. I want to be better, reading books that are great. And absolutely, you can be whoever you want to be and whoever you choose to be, but it's a daily intentional decision of who you're going to be, of where you're going to look today that will shape your tomorrows.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. So thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for taking the time of reflection and talking to us about your experiences. Becoming a part of your journey ultimately impacts ours. So Noelle, until we see each other again, stay alive to tell about it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Bob. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.